Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, and welcome to Your Family Dog. This week is part two of Ginger and Murphy Do the Beach. Last week, we talked a little bit about road trips and what you need to do to make your road trips more successful with your dogs. And this week, what we're going to talk about is how to help your dog in new surroundings. So one of the things that both Colleen and I agree on is that when your dog is exposed to a completely new environment where we're not just going for the afternoon, but maybe we're staying for a few days, that it's going to require a lot more supervision. So Colleen, would you like to expand on that a little bit?
Sure. So it seems obvious that when we go to someplace new, you're going to want to pay more attention to your dog. But it's a very common mistake that people make where they just sort of come to a new house and let the dog off leash and just let the dog go free. And then they find out the dog went and marked the couch. And it doesn't make you the most welcome of guests. And we want to be looking at how am I helping my dog adapt to this new environment and do it in a way that's appropriate. So what I like to tell people is right in the beginning, give them less freedom and more supervision so that we can see, is your dog comfortable? Is your dog afraid? Is your dog worried about things? Is your dog just a little unsettled because things have changed? Or is your dog fine? And once we know where we are, then gradually we can start making changes. And it's such a subtle point, but if you have a really good dog, you tend to think, he'll be great. It'll be fine. And sometimes it's not.
Absolutely. Sometimes it's not. We had an experience recently where my husband and I and our daughter took a trip to see to my nephew's wedding and left the dogs with her husband. Now, we had taken the dogs to their house several times. They were comfortable with Thomas. They'd been there in the house. And yet, the big difference was this time Brad and I weren't there, and Thomas had a difficult time with the dogs because they were not used to being there without Brad and I. So that even with the best of planning, things don't always go like you want. So that constant supervision is more likely to give you a successful outcome, especially if you are there to supervise. And don't ask somebody else to supervise the dog, because the dog really needs his person there to help him through all this.
Right.
So in conjunction with that, I think all the other points we're going to talk about sort of come under that umbrella of more supervision. And one of the first ones that I noticed that I like to think of is continuing what we talked about with the last episode, which is frequent breaks. Frequent breaks are really important for your dog. Some dogs' response to stress is to urinate or defecate more often. And so I think it's really important that your dogs also get a break from perhaps being inside a strange house, getting outside in a yard, or taking a walk, which is much more familiar to them. Give them those frequent breaks from the stress of being in a new environment with plenty of opportunities to go to the bathroom outside so that they don't go to the bathroom inside, which is what no one wants at all.
And some of the signals that your dog uses to tell you that they'd like to go out at home may be different in the new environment. So your dog may be thinking, I kind of told her that I needed to go out. And you're thinking, well, you didn't go stand where you normally stand because we're not in our normal place. So I didn't notice your signal. So it is really a bit of watching your dog and really knowing your dog.
I was just going to say, one of the things to really pay attention to is restlessness.
Yes.
The dog may not know which door I'm supposed to go out, but I'm really restless. I can't settle. I can't move. I can't sit, whatever. Restlessness is probably a real key that I need a break. So that would be the one that I would say pay really close attention. Instead of going, why don't you settle down? It's like, you won't settle down. Maybe you need a break. So if you ask yourself, why won't you settle down? There should be a little ding in your head going, you probably need to go out.
Right. And then after you've taken the dog out, if the dog still won't settle down, then that's your job to help the dog settle down. So that's where a stuffed Kong or a chew toy or something comes into play, because your dog is in this new environment and it's just, I'm not entirely sure how we can do this. And we need to look at the variables. Is it noise? Is it, you know, too hot, too cold, too busy, too whatever? What can I do to make this better for my dog? And how can I, you know, help the dog with this transition? So beach-wise, looking specifically at a beach, there's really nothing like ocean waves in your average dog's life. So for many dogs, their first trip to the beach is the first time they've ever encountered a body of water that fights back. So we have this sort of experience. And years ago, I went to the beach with my Australian cattle dog, and she was going to take on the ocean and win. She was sure of it. She was, you know, barking it down and standing there. And as I went into the water, she was like, there is a problem and I'm going to save you. And then several years later, I was there with a golden retriever who stood on the shore looking at me sadly when I was in the water. And she was like, I'm very sorry that you're going to drown and die, but I will find another family who loves me. And it was such a different response. Neither of my dogs wanted to get into that water that was fighting, but the cattle dog was thinking she would if she had to. But the ocean itself for a dog, especially for a puppy who's had some positive experiences with it, can be fun to play at the edge of the water. But if a dog isn't prepared for it, it can be kind of shocking or alarming.
Oh, it can. In fact, that happened to us when we were living in Ecuador, and we had a little dog by the name of Bandit, and we went out to the beach, and he was having a grand time running up and down the beach until a wave, and it wasn't that big a wave, but it was big in comparison to him, came and just knocked him over, scared the living daylights out of him. He jumped up, and he took off perpendicular to he took off perpendicular to the ocean, flying towards across the beach and towards the road, and it took Brad and I everything we had to get to him and calm him down. So we finally got him calm enough. He would walk on the beach with us, and we were walking. We turned around a corner, and there was a dead, stinky dolphin. And again, he took off running, and I'm like, there is just no safe place on this beach. So we got him to calm down again. And this time, the way I got him to beach was I taught him how to dig in the sand. And he thought that was great fun. So we started out away from the water. Who wouldn't want to avoid a dead, decaying dolphin? But anyway, as far away from the dolphin as we could get. And I taught him to dig. And then eventually, when we moved back to Michigan and we didn't have those huge ocean waves, we were at beaches. He really did love the water and love the beach and would dig, which my husband wasn't happy about, the digging part. But it made him happy, so that made me happy. But be careful of those waves. They can be really scary. And if they hit your dog, you don't know what it's going to do. It could really terrify him for life.
That brings us into the fear piece. Like that we have to be recognizing whether our dog is comfortable or uncomfortable. Right. And like a wave that comes out of nowhere isn't something your dog was worrying about in advance necessarily. But there are lots of things in new environments that dogs do worry about. And frequently we people find that moment of fear funny, and it's not funny. Fear isn't funny. So just yesterday I saw a video of a puppy exploring a feather in his yard, and the feather was very alarming, and he was barking at it and bouncing around this terrifying feather. But on his own pace, he was able to sort of explore and see, like, is the feather safe? And then there was this really unfortunate moment when he got brave enough to put his nose down and sniff that feather, and the feather stuck to his nose, which clearly was an attack. I mean, the puppy had been attacked by a feather, and it chased him. As he pulled his nose away, the feather came with, alarming.
Yes.
But after he was able to work through it on his own and make some progress with that, he discovered it was indeed a feather. Not actually that scary. But not
the whole bird.
Yeah, not the whole bird. And what happens sometimes when an animal is frightened by something is we laugh because it's a little bit startling at times. Mm-hmm. But also then people like to set it up. Like, honestly, the cat videos with the cucumbers just break my heart. You know, there are so many videos of cats being terrified. Do you know about the cats and the cucumbers?
No, I'm afraid I missed that one.
Oh, well, let me tell you. As if we're going to have a broken heart, you should have one too. So basically what happens is there's this entire horrific series of videos where a cat will be eating typically. So, you know, head down, paying attention to something else, and someone will put a cucumber down behind the cat. And when the cat turns, the peripheral vision catches a lurking shape right by them. And they launch vertically in terror.
Aww.
And it's so funny. We record it. We set it up and we do it. Look, Scared my cat. Look, scared my cat. 10,000 likes. Yay, I'm terrifying my cat. No, fear isn't funny. Fear isn't funny. So being startled, like you might laugh when you see the video, but you're not laughing that you think it's, hopefully your heart will recognize that this is an unkind thing to deliberately do to an animal. So for this puppy who was exploring the feather, chasing the puppy down with a feather, you know, like, look, I found a feather. Look, here's a feather. It scares you. That's not funny. So when you're in a new environment, there are so many things that your dog might find scary, and it's not helpful to throw them into the situation or to, you know, just keep presenting it like, look, this isn't scary.
Right. No, well, it's the whole like, concept of a forced novelty. Everyone mm-hmm. likes new things, but everyone likes new things at their own pace. And I wrote about this in a blog called Beware of Cement Pigs, in which my dog Bingley walked by a cement pig in my neighbor's yard, and I think I described it in an earlier podcast, and he looked at the pig. I said, oh, it's like this really scary. We'd walked by this pig I don't know how many times. And mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. Well, he looked at me, he looked at the pig, he looked back at me, I gave him a treat. He mm-hmm. leaned towards the pig, looked at me, I gave him a treat. So this whole process of him eventually exploring the pig until the end where he was taking treats right off the top of the pig's head, the whole thing took maybe 5 or 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And by that point on, the pig never bothered him again. But the point yeah. was, is I didn't drag him over to the pig. I let him make overtures towards the pig. And I think that that's really important. And I paired it with a lot of treats, things that
he
liked.
You paired it with food. Yeah.
Yes. So I think about that when you're at the beach. Maybe what you do when you walk up and, you know, there's always little pathways to the beach. And you stand at the beach and you just look at the beach. You don't even step mm-hmm. onto it. You give him a couple of treats, you know. And then he steps forward, you give him another treat. He looks at this, you give him a treat. But the other thing I would do, too, is make sure that when you are walking on the beach to begin with, that you have him on a leash at a fair mm-hmm. distance from the waves. So he learns to recognize the waves and the sound and the lapping and stuff without the opportunity for them to bowl him over, and pair that with a lot of treats. So I think there's an easy way to introduce your dog to all these new things by pairing them with food, but also recognizing when he's telling you, these are making me uncomfortable, I'm kind of afraid of them. And there can be some very subtle ones. Like, for example, when I have, one of the things I tell people is watch for movement away. And it can be as little as your yes. dog leaning away. So if we see the mm-hmm. the waves and we lean back, mm-hmm. he's saying, I need more distance. I'm uncomfortable. This is scary. Or maybe he'll take a step back, or maybe he'll move to the other side of you. All of these things are very clear signals that he's telling you, whatever it is that's ahead of me is making me uncomfortable. So be very aware of how your dog moves. If he slows down, oftentimes mm-hmm. if dog is slowing way down, I can't move at all, you know, if he stops completely, or I just slow way down, I lean in towards you, I lean away from what's bothering me, I step behind you, I step to the other side of you. These are all his very clear signals that this is uncomfortable.
Yeah. Or moving very slowly toward the whatever, but only the front end is committing. So my hind legs are staying where they are, but with my forelegs, I'll come forward just a little bit. That is, I mean, it's not leaning away, but the commitment is away. You know, the body, it wants to be away. And the dog is like, let me check that out. So being really conscious of.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that should all be paired with food, saying, yes, that's a shell. Isn't that cool?
Exactly.
Yes, you can have a treat for leaning towards the shell, even in a very slow. And watch your dog's mouth. Because oftentimes mm-hmm. dogs who are stressed like this, not only will they start leaning away or moving very slowly, their mouths will snap shut. Boom. Mm-hmm. I have a closed mouth because they're carrying a lot of tension in their mouths. So you might have the big happy golden retriever when we're at the motel and we're walking across the street and this is really cool. And then we look at the beach and the mouth closes yeah. and the body stiffens and we slow way down and we lean into you. This is not a dog who's enjoying this moment.
And so being able to recognize when your dog is enjoying or not enjoying is, I mean, it's just the fundamental piece of being an advocate for your dog. You have to be able to tell, is my dog happy? Is my dog tolerating? Is my dog trying to end this? And always knowing. And a lot of new experiences have a lot of moments where they're just sort of tolerating, or they would really like to end it. And so we want to say, you know, how can I make this better? How can I make it easier for the dog? So recognizing the body language of fear can be really helpful for that.
And I think most people recognize the major language of fear. Like if a dog really cowers down and the tail tucks tight underneath the rear end and I'm frozen in a little ball, that's pretty obvious I'm afraid of what's going on. But there's a lot more subtle ones. And those are the ones that I want people to really start paying attention to, because those are the ones that you don't want to then push your dog into having to show you these major signs of fear, because that's going to be a much more difficult right. situation to get your dog accustomed to.
One subtle one that's really easy to miss, that people misinterpret a lot, is not wanting to eat. So your dog's totally into food, life is great, you're offering food, and then he stops taking food. And they say, well, he doesn't want it, or he doesn't take it. And you're thinking, yeah, because now he's uncomfortable. Like when he's right. that uncomfortable, he was hungry earlier and now he's not, it's about the environment. Something has changed and now we're uncomfortable. And that's pretty subtle. People are, you know,
right.
I just talked to a person yesterday and they're like, oh, my dog is totally food motivated. Apparently that's a very difficult thing for me to say. Maybe everything is difficult for me to say today. Anyway, this very food motivated dog won't take a treat when there are other dogs around because he's barking his head off. And I'm like, well, yeah, because he's so stressed. like, but he won't take anything. Like, right, because it's too much, too close, too much. We have to get farther and, you know, change some of those pieces. So when we're looking at some of this fear stuff, those subtler pieces, the leaning away or the panting more heavily, or just even in our last episode where we were talking about restlessness, you know,
yes, pacing is another one.
So sort of that like hypervigilance or pacing, or I just don't know what to think or do in this moment. Julie and I both just did the body language of that. So we record these with video so that we try not to step over each other too much when we're talking, and yet we still do. However, the body language to watch us act out dog stuff, where we might have to switch our podcast to being a video cast at some point because we are crazy. So
that's right. But you know, the other thing is I was going to say with the not eating, oftentimes I find that comes with the hypervigilant dog, the dog who is like, wow, I just don't know. I can't move. I just don't know what to do. Everything. There's just so much going on around me that it's very distressing to me. I need to pace. I need to move. And I can't possibly think about eating at this point. So, but it also can happen with the dog that just shuts way down. So the not eating one can happen in either way. And so what I tell people, they say, well, what do I do? I said, in this particular incident, distance is your best friend. So that even if you can't pinpoint what it is that's bothering him, like I could with Bingley with the cement pig, it was really clear what it was that was distressing him. I mean, cement pigs, who knows what they're capable of.
They're terrifying.
They are terrifying.
Yeah.
But go back to the spot where you knew he could take treats and start there. So even if you don't know exactly what it is that's bothering him, but you know that 50 yards back he was taking treats, go back there and stop. Let him take some treats, settle into this spot, and then allow him to move in the direction that he wants to go and reward him for that.
And that is actually a really important point for all learning. Human learning, dog learning, whatever kind of learning we're talking about, is when things fall apart, going back to a point of success. So in this case, it's how far do we need to be from a cement pig to be able to have your brain back in your body and an ability to focus and things are going well. But it could be the same thing if we're, you know, studying Grecian art or learning a new skill or trying to do something different in our own lives, develop a new habit. Going back to your point of success and then working forward when everything falls apart is a really important point for improving learning.
Well, the other thing is I feel too is it's important for a dog to feel successful. So if you go back to the point where the dog is successful and you give him a few treats and he really settles down and it's like, okay, I'm happy on the beach right here, then stay there for a little while and go back, go away, go back to the hotel, go for a walk someplace else. And then the next day, I have a client who's working, whose little German Shepherd tends to be excitable by children. So one of the things that we're doing is, and we figured out a distance at which this dog got excitable. And I'm going to say it's like 70 feet. So I said, okay, what you might want to do is there a playground nearby? She said, yes. And I said, go to the playground. You know that distance. Start there and back up a little bit even so that we're at a distance where this dog can look at the kids, look at her, and get a treat and not react. And then slowly close that distance. And I want you to do this, you know, like once or twice a day for like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, because the playground's fairly close to her house. So she goes over, and each time she goes a little bit closer. And then I said, when you start to see him start to tense up, and lean forward and about to bark, back up, give a treat, and leave. And then the next day, you might be able to start instead at 70 feet. Maybe you can start at 60 feet. But don't go right to where you ended, which would maybe been at 40 feet.
Right.
So the next day, start at 60. You can move forward, and maybe that day you're going to get to 30. Then you back up and you leave. The next day you start at 50. So you're not going to start at your ending point. You have to start somewhere.
Yes.
Before that and work it down slowly. But it might not take very long if you're willing to let your dog take charge of this process in letting you know how comfortable they are. You might find that actually your dog will become accustomed to the beach in a day, as opposed to if you force him onto the beach and really solidify that fear, you will never have a day at the beach with your dog.
Yes. And if you can think in advance about some of the things that may be different or odd that could help you when you get to the new environment to help your dog over some of those things. So one of the things about a beach that's different and odd is the sand shifts under your feet in a way most other things that dogs walk on don't. So your dog might think that's weird. Like, okay, the ground is now no longer steady. There may be more people in close proximity, depending on what beach you're at. There may be people running, yelling, throwing things, very common beach activities.
Correct.
There may be people who are moving very oddly because they're bobbing in water. So we have half of a person bobbing around. That's weird. Haven't seen that before. Don't like it.
Well, what about in floaties? You know, things like life wraps and in inner tubes and all those things, or, you know, big ones that are like I saw one that I think I'm going to have to get for my granddaughter because her head will literally explode, which is a big unicorn inner tube with a tail, and it's just like her head will literally explode. But I mean, you don't see big bobbing things like that, you know? So one of the things you could do is one, if you have a friend who has a sandbox, ask them if you can come over and just let your dog, if they promise them, if the dog goes to the bathroom, you will clean it all up and you'll buy them new sand. But ask them if your dog can come over and just walk through the sandbox to get used to that feel of sand under their feet. If your friend who has a pool and has kids, maybe, and they've got some floaties, your dog can stand even outside the gate of their pool and watch what's going on and realize that, and you're giving them a lot of treats. Or even if you have a community pool that allows floaties, not a lot of community pools allow floating things, but they will still have people bobbing up and down. They'll still have half people in water. So, you know, maybe you can stand outside the gate at a community pool and allow your dog to watch that. It's not the same as the beach, but it's a lot closer of an experience than anything else you're going to be able to provide.
Right. Right. One thought that crossed my mind when you were talking about the sandbox is also that your dog in a new environment that's very different from your home environment may not know where to go to the bathroom.
Right.
So a lot of dogs who travel like to Arizona and places where there isn't much grass go, I have no idea where one should relieve oneself. Where's the loo? Please, someone help me. There are no signs. So being conscious of that too. You know, your dog might be totally comfortable going to the bathroom on sand, but your dog might be holding it for a really long time because they're not finding something that feels like their preferred substrate, which apparently is formed right around 9 weeks. So what your dog was going to the bathroom on at 9 weeks old is what their preferred bathroom material is.
So maybe if your dog had a lot of accidents at 9 weeks, they're going to wait till they get to back to the condo's carpeting.
Indeed. Or so, if they were raised in a puppy mill or a kennel, they might look for, you know, concrete or for something like that, which isn't ideal, you know. So it is, right, it is a concern that we want to make sure that we're giving our dogs outlets and really looking at, will they be comfortable going here? Because we're thinking, oh, it's, you know, it's moss or mulch, you're fine. And the dog is going, but it's not grass. I go on grass.
Yes, that's right. Which is what Kate, just kind of back to puppy socialization, is that, yeah, you have a preferred substrate, which is grass for your dog, but you might allow your dog to go to the bathroom on a few other things during that,
yes,
puppy socialization period. That would be very helpful. So, all right. So I think that when we're talking about new surroundings, we, the one other thing that we mentioned in the last one, but I think is worth mentioning again, is having something that your dog finds reassuring, either their bed, yes, their blanket. Bingy, or not Bingy, but Zuzu's favorite toy right now is Blobby.
What is Blobby?
Blobby is
a picture of Blobby. Yet
Blobby is this big purple fuzzy ball that's about the size of a soccer ball and has eyeballs.
Okay, like the, Blobby.
Blobby.
Now I
purple
can totally
Blobby.
Picture Blobby. Can we get a picture of Zuzu and Blobby for the show notes?
We could probably get a picture of Zuzu and Blobby with the show notes.
Okay.
So I try to remember to take something like Blobby with us so that we have something, because Zuzu, being Zuzu, likes to suck on things. So I'd much rather have her sucking on Blobby than my, you know, my mm-hmm. host comforter.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that. A blanket, a pillow. And if one of the things you might want to do is, if you don't want to take the giant dog bed, which bless your heart, you do take for Edzo, you might want to get a towel or a blanket, or, you know, a small mat or something that you actually put on their bed for a few weeks before you go. So that gets their scent. And so you're taking that rather than the entire bed. So that, yeah, would be something, even, you know, a towel from Walmart or something would work really well. One of the things I tell people to train their dogs to is get a rubber-backed bathroom mat and train your dog to go to bed onto the bathroom mat. And that's easy to roll up and take wherever you want to go. And it doesn't slide around, which is nice for dogs. So it can, yeah, stay put. So those are a few other suggestions. So to reiterate, more supervision really needs to be the key. That's the overarching theme here. And if nothing else, just remember, I need to supervise him, and you need to supervise him, not your host or hostess. Frequent breaks are important because dogs may feel like they need to urinate or defecate more often. Keep your dog on a regular schedule. Try and keep the feeding times and walk times as close to what you do at home. That may help them be more comfortable. Be keenly aware of dog body language, especially the more subtle ones, and know that if your dog is afraid, it's not funny. It's a situation that requires you helping him.
And we'll put a link in there to Sophia Yin's Body Language of Fear,
yes,
in Dogs poster, which has it has Lily Chin's lovely artwork that has a few signals that can be nice for people to notice that aren't necessarily things people always think of.
Perfect.
Sorry to interrupt. Return to your recap.
Pair new experiences with treats. Nobody likes forced mm-hmm. novelty. Everyone wants to learn things at their own pace. Let the dog set the pace. And remember to bring something that is comforting to the dog, other than you, which is probably the most comforting thing to the dog,
yes,
but something that he can latch onto, so that when you're leaving him with a friend, he's got a stuffed Kong and his Blobby or his blanket to be on while you two go out for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have anything else to add to that, Colleen?
No, I think that's good. So Ginger sent us this really short, I don't know, 2-sentence question, and we turned it into 2 podcasts. So that,
yeah,
is,
yes,
what happens. That's what happens with us, is that whole concept of, people think they ask something simple, and we're like, dogs, let's talk about dogs.
Nothing
but
simple.
We love getting questions,
and
we love answering them in far, far too long conversations. So we hope that if others have questions, that they will ask us and bear with,
yes,
us as we ramble along answering them.
And you can submit your question to, let's see,
feedback,
what is it?
At yourfamilydogpodcast.com, or you can call it. Call us at 614-349-1661.
Terrific. Thank you, Colleen. We will see you all next week, and have fun at the beach.
Yes. Have a great trip, Ginger and Murphy.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.